It has been a year since a four-day humanitarian pause was declared in the Gaza Strip. At the time, hopes were high that this could finally bring an end to the suffering of Palestinians in Gaza. However, all hopes were dashed after the Israeli regime resumed attacking the besieged territory. Now, 1 year on, there is no end in sight to the onslaught as the Israeli regime passes ahead with its attacks.
The bombings we are hearing are a clear example of the Israeli terror that has not stopped for over a year, and the regime still refuses to end its genocidal campaign. A year ago, we thought that this genocide ended, but all we have is more suffering.
Palestinians say the Israeli regime should heed international calls and stop its aggression in Gaza to allow the displaced families to return to their homes.
We were very pleased with last year's truce announcement. We thought and hoped that it would put an end for this onslaught. But here we are, after an entire year, still waiting for the moment a permanent ceasefire is announced again. We are exhausted and just want to return to our homes in northern Gaza.
Since October last year, the Israeli regime has rejected all ceasefire deals and hampered all efforts to put an end to the war.
Those against?
The U.S. this week vetoed a U.N. Security Council resolution that called for a ceasefire in Gaza. The draft resolution aimed for an immediate, unconditional, and permanent ceasefire in Gaza, alongside a demand for the release of all Israeli captives held by Hamas. The measure received 14 votes in favor, with the U.S. the sole member to reject it.
1 year ago, Gazans held into fragile hope that the Israeli genocide was finally coming to an end. However, today they are left grappling with uncertainty as they navigate the harsh realities of the current situation. They find themselves asking if they will ever breathe that long-awaited sigh of relief again. Ahmed al-Najjar, Khan Yunis.
Thousands of Jordanians took part in a massive rally in Amman after Friday prayers, protesting Israel's recent statements about displacing Palestinians from the occupied West Bank. They condemned the remarks as part of the Zionist agenda to undermine the Palestinians' right to statehood.
The annexation of the West Bank is no longer a matter of isolated statements from extremists. It has become a central agenda of the Israeli regime. The U.S. administration clearly refuses to recognize that the West Bank is under occupation and the plans to displace Palestinians and annex the territory amounts to declaration of war on Jordan. The so-called two-state solution and peace settlement are now effectively dead. Incoming U.S. President Donald Trump has explicitly stated that Israel is small and needs to be expanded. We reaffirm our unity in opposing the Zionist agenda and rejecting these dangerous schemes.
Participants in the rally organized by the Islamic movement in Jordan under the slogan Annexation of the West Bank, a declaration of war on Jordan, warned against the potential evacuation of certain areas in the occupied territories, similar to the situation in Gaza. They also raised concerns about Israeli threats to Jordan, stressing the need to strengthen the internal front in response to these challenges.
In this march, we reaffirm our rejection of the far-right Israeli cabinet's plans, including the annexation of the occupied West Bank and the Judaization of Al-Quds. It is imperative that all ties with this Israeli entity be severed, and our internal front must be strengthened to prepare for confronting this aggression and the regime's expansionist ambitions.
We are here to deliver several messages, including one to the international community. Israel's decision to annex the West Bank is, politically, a declaration of war on Jordan and an attempt to reshape the West Asia by displacing Palestinians in the West Bank and dissolving the Palestinian Authority. We must confront this looming threat and firmly state that we will not allow such actions.
Participants condemned the statements of certain Israeli officials and denounced their racist, inflammatory, and extremist comments that advocate for Israeli sovereignty over the occupied West Bank and the expansion of settlements. Jordanians continue to protest against Israel's atrocities, condemning the ongoing genocide of Palestinians in Gaza and severe violations of the Wadi Araba Treaty. Zaid Agarbe, Amman.
truly, as a soldier commissioned by yourself in this mission, upon completing the operation to liberate Abu Kamal, the last stronghold of Daesh, and lowering the flag of this American Zionist group and raising the flag of Syria, I announce the end of the rule of this accursed evil tree.
That was part of Commander Qasem Soleimani's letter to the leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran, announcing the success of his forces in defeating Daesh terrorist group and freeing their last stronghold. And today, the anniversary of this success has been named National Heroes Day in the country in the loving memory of this commander, who was in the end assassinated by the U.S.
This is the nature of imperialism. Whoever stands in the way of their interests, they'll either try to buy him off or they'll assassinate him. Martyr Soleimani wouldn't be bought off with money. He wouldn't stray from his path with the promise of material gain. So, they decided to assassinate him.
The Daesh terrorist group, which was initially created by the U.S., attracted more terrorists in the region and mobilized them against countries that resisted the Israeli occupation.
Commander Soleimani successfully dealt a significant blow to the Western Front, particularly the U.S., as evidenced by numerous leaked documents from their own officials. For instance, during a presidential debate, Trump mentioned the role that Clinton played in creating ISIS.
She gave us ISIS as sure as you are sitting there. And what happened is now ISIS is in 32 countries, and now I listen how she's going to get rid of ISIS. She's going to get rid of nobody.
But American crimes went beyond the assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Mohammad Reza Zahedi, another commander who had brought about the defeat of Daesh terrorists, was later assassinated by Israelis in line with the same policy. A crime followed by yet another assassination, that of Commander Abbas Nilforoushan.
The Islamic Republic and the Iranian nation demonstrated unwavering resilience in their fight against the terrorist-natured war targeting the Muslim world. This conflict was part of a larger U.S. strategy, in conjunction with its key ally Israel, aimed at achieving their respective goals in West Asia. Israel seeks to secure its existential interests, while the U.S. aims to regain power and influence in the region. Given this context, maintaining vigilance is crucial.
For years, Iranians have raised their children ready to fight back. Their culture of resistance is evident in the many traditions and events held to revive the memories of the heroes of resistance on occasions such as National Heroes Day. According to the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, such memoirs are more than personal stories. They are our national heritage. Preserving them helps empower our nation to overcome challenges. Therefore, as heroes battle and fall, Iranians are determined to keep their memories alive. Mariam Azarchar, Tehran.
On Wednesday, Washington voted down a resolution for ceasefire in the Gaza Strip at UN Security Council, while the other 14 members of the council voted in favor. The draft also called for release of captives held by Hamas resistance group in Gaza, but U.S. officials said the language was not strong enough as it did not condition the ceasefire on the release of captives.
We cannot support a resolution that calls for an unconditional, immediate ceasefire.
Following the vote, representatives of countries attending the Security Council session spoke out against the move.
If it were not for the repeated use of the veto by the United States or its claim that the UN Security Council resolutions are non-binding, the United Nations Security Council would not be so weak and ineffective.
For months, the U.S. has been confusing everyone and obstructing the UN Security Council efforts of developing a response to a catastrophic situation in Gaza, pandering to one side of the conflict in order to achieve its own political goals at the cost of Palestinian lives.
There's no justification whatsoever for vetoing a resolution trying to stop atrocities. No justification for that.
Iran also condemned the U.S. veto as disgraceful and said it reveals Washington's full contempt for innocent lives and peace. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas said by vetoing the resolution, the U.S. once again demonstrated its direct complicity in the aggression against Palestinians. The Palestinian Islamic Jihad also called the American administration a partner to the genocide, an accusation that is even echoed in the United States.
What this extremist government has done in Gaza is unspeakable. But what makes it even more painful is that much of this has been done with U.S. weapons and American taxpayer dollars.
Sanders was speaking ahead of a resolution seeking to block the Biden administration's recent sale of $20 billion of weapons to Israel. However, with 79 to 18 votes against the measure, the Senate blocked passage of the resolution. The U.S. provides Israel with at least $3.8 billion in military aid annually, and the Joe Biden administration has authorized $14 billion in further assistance to the regime since the Israeli genocide began.
Representatives of the five member states of the Eurasian Economic Union, namely Russia, Belarus, Kazakhstan, Armenia, and Kyrgyzstan, along with the chairman of Iran's Trade Promotion Organization and Iran's ambassador to Russia, held a meeting to coordinate the third exclusive exhibition of Eurasia in Iran later in February.
Very good field for cooperating between two countries, business of two countries, and actually we would like to thank the organizers of this event, and I believe that will be this platform will be the good platform for cooperating and increasing our turnover between our two countries.
The Islamic Republic of Iran offers great potential as one of the major economic powers in the region. Our goal should be to pinpoint nations that we can collaborate with. The Eurasian Economic Union offers many opportunities, particularly taking Russia into consideration. Currently, Iran is serving as a hub for Russian goods.
Expo 2025 is a unique platform that can help introduce Iran's industrial capabilities and market opportunities to businessmen and industrialists of EEU member states.
Considering our strong historical and cultural ties with EEU member states, we can certainly benefit from the participation of Eurasian member countries in the upcoming exhibition.
The Eurasia Economic Union is the biggest union neighboring Iran. Both Iran and its member countries can make the most of the opportunities this union can provide.
Collaborating with the nations in the region is in accordance with the economic policies of Iran. The EU is the most important union in our region. The North-South Corridor is a strategic international transit route that can provide the EU access to the international waters.
Participants believe cooperation between Iran and the EEU can help boost Iran's economy.
The EU offers the opportunity to Iran to expand its business relations despite Western sanctions. Particularly in technical fields such as engineering, we can offer our services to these countries.
Iran has already signed a free trade agreement with three of the EU member states.
The trade volume of the EU is approximately $900 billion. Iranian companies are hoping to benefit from a substantial share of this opportunity.
In line with its economic interests, Iran is currently looking forward to gaining observer status in the EU.
The Eurasia Expo 2025 serves as a platform for Iranian companies to present their capabilities, potentially leading to free trade with Eurasian Economic Union member countries. Mehdi Nourouzi, Tehran.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
Mm-hmm.
the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who allowed none to witness when He created the heavens and the earth, and who took no helper when He authored the spirits. He has no associate in divinity and no support in unity. Tongues fall silent before the limits of describing Him. Intellects fail before the core of knowing Him. Terrents fall low in awe of Him. Faces are humbled in fear of Him. And everything mighty yields to His mightiness. So to Thee belongs praise again and again, well measured, continually, and methodically. And may His blessings be upon His messenger endlessly, and His salutation everlastingly, eternally. O Allah, make the beginning of this day of mine righteousness, its middle prosperity, and its end success. I seek refuge in Thee from a day whose beginning is fright, and whose middle is anxiety, and whose end is pain. O Allah, I pray forgiveness from Thee for every vow I have vowed, and every promise I have promised, and every pledge I have pledged, then failed to keep for Thee. I ask Thee concerning the complaints of Thy servants against me. If there is a servant from among Thy servants, of a handmaid from among Thy handmaids, who has against me a complaint, because I have wronged him in respect to himself, his reputation, his property, his wife or his child, or because evil words I have spoken about him in his absence, an imposition upon him through inclination, caprice, scorn, zeal, false show, bigotry, whether he be absent or present, alive or dead, such that my hand has fallen short and my capacity has been too narrow to make restitution to him or to annul my obligation to him, I ask Thee, O He who owns all objects of need which are granted by His will and hastened to His desire, that Thou blessest Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, peace be upon them, and makest the one I have wronged satisfied with me in the manner that Thou willest, and givest me mercy from Thee. Forgiveness decreases Thee not, and giving injuries Thee not. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, give me on every Monday two favors from Thee: the facility to obey Thee at its beginning, and the favor of Thy forgiveness at its end. O He who is Allah, and none other than whom grants forgiveness for sins.
Sound from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story. In
what is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome, everyone.
The United States on Wednesday vetoed a draft UN Security Council resolution calling for a Gaza ceasefire, marking the 49th time the U.S. has used its veto power against Israel-related UN Security Council draft resolutions. Four of those come in the past year that could have put an end to Israel's campaign of genocide in the Gaza Strip. Every member of the Security Council, except for the U.S., voted in favor of the measure, many of them close U.S. allies. Hamas says a diplomatic cover for Israel's onslaught highlights America's direct complicity in the genocide and ethnic cleansing against the Palestinian people. We'll discuss this and more on this segment of your Spotlight.
On Wednesday, Washington voted down a resolution for ceasefire in the Gaza Strip at UN Security Council, while the other 14 members of the council voted in favor. The draft also called for release of captives held by Hamas resistance group in Gaza, but U.S. officials said the language was not strong enough as it did not condition the ceasefire on the release of captives.
We cannot support a resolution that calls for an unconditional, immediate ceasefire.
Following the vote, representatives of countries attending the Security Council session spoke out against the move.
If it were not for the repeated use of the veto by the United States or its claim that the UN Security Council resolutions are non-binding, the United Nations Security Council would not be so weak and ineffective.
For months, the U.S. has been confusing everyone and obstructing the UN Security Council efforts of developing a response to a catastrophic situation in Gaza, pandering to one side of the conflict in order to achieve its own political goals at the cost of Palestinian lives.
There's no justification whatsoever for vetoing a resolution trying to stop atrocities. No justification for that.
Iran also condemned the U.S. veto as disgraceful and said it reveals Washington's full contempt for innocent lives and peace. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas said by vetoing the resolution, the U.S. once again demonstrated its direct complicity in the aggression against Palestinians. The Palestinian Islamic Jihad also called the American administration a partner to the genocide, an accusation that is even echoed in the United States.
The United States cannot be complicit to these atrocities. We cannot give billions of dollars to the Netanyahu government and have them defy U.S. law while they take U.S. money.
Sanders was speaking ahead of a resolution seeking to block the Biden administration's recent sale of $20 billion of weapons to Israel. However, with 79 to 18 votes against the measure, the Senate blocked passage of the resolution. The U.S. provides Israel with at least $3.8 billion in military aid annually, and the Joe Biden administration has authorized $14 billion in further assistance to the regime since the Israeli genocide began.
And now joining us for the program, Laith Maarouf, activist and political commentator, joining us from Beirut. And Mr. Daniel Shaw, academic and commentator, joining us out of New York. Gentlemen, welcome to the program, to the both of you. Pleasure to have you both on. I guess, Laith, we'll start with you out there in Beirut. 49 times over the years, U.S. leadership stopped while the whole world wanted an end to some form of abuse against Palestinians, whether it be the theft of their land, their apartheid against them, some form of marginalization, dozens of forms of abuse, including ethnic cleansing and now genocide. The U.S. says no every single time. Four times in the past year they could have put an end to this bloodshed. They kept saying no. Your initial thoughts?
Well, it's in keeping with the American policies over the decades and a proof that the Zionist colony is a frontline base, a military base for Western imperialism. The United States knows that the collapse of the Zionist colony means its end of its control of Western Asia and North Africa and a retreat to its natural borders. This is also compounded by the fact that Yemen has been able to, for the first time in 600 years, destroy the ability of Western powers to project their power on nations across the globe through naval presence. An end of the Zionist colony will mean the end of Western hegemony and the empire ruled from Washington, D.C. So we shouldn't be expecting that the United States does anything different than that it is doing now.
Thank you, Leith. And Daniel, welcome to the program. Four times over this last year, four ripe opportunities to put an end to the genocide, to the bloodshed, to the homes crumbling down with entire families inside them, Danny. Four stabs in the back of Palestinians time and again. You could kick it off anywhere you like. Go ahead, in any dimension of these atrocities, but stick with the veto if you can, please. Go ahead.
As Leith has laid out, this is not just an Israeli or a Zionist Holocaust. This is a German Holocaust. This is a French, English, and principally an American Holocaust. The United States continues to send how many tens of billions of dollars to expedite this genocide. They have every veto that they could use in different international bodies in the United Nations and beyond. They could stop Netanyahu. They could stop the Knesset. They could stop the Zionist ruling class if they had any interest in doing so. For 76 long colonial genocidal years, the U.S. has had no interest. Israel is nothing more than an extension of Western and U.S. imperial interests in the Middle East, as my colleague has laid out. So whether it's Tweedledee on January 20th or Joe Biden right now, who seems to be searching for a nuclear showdown before he leaves office in these next 2 months, it has mattered little, Republican or Democrat. It's been the same genocidal policy. This number of 44,000 dead is absolutely ridiculous. That doesn't take into account how many children, how many vulnerable families. The death toll, according to Lancet Medical Journal, appears to be much closer to 200,000 Palestinians at that point. And even that count, how could it ever be accurate with so many families still buried under rubble?
Right. And Leith, I want to come back to a point you made, that if the U.S. Basically didn't push for this resolution, didn't support it like the other 14 states that did, that it somehow goes against its plan to keep a firm base there in Israel, in West Asia, for its Western hegemony. It could put an end to the resolution without turning its back on, I mean, it could have supported the resolution without turning its back on Israel, saying, look, you're our brother in arms, but too much is too much. This is a campaign of genocide. There are 16,000 children killed, 44,000 people, 72% of them women and children. This has to stop. You know, we're still going to be friends at the end of the day, but this particular campaign you got going on has to stop. But you don't even see that firm of a backbone of leadership in Washington, do you?
No, you will never see that. And that is because, obviously, you know, the minute this war stops, there will be a reckoning inside the Zionist colony and for the Zionist colony globally. Already, the whole planet hates Israel and Israelis. And right now, we also have those arrest warrants on the head of state, the Prime Minister Netanyahu, and the Minister of War that is outgoing, which means that all members of the cabinet of Israel and all its ambassadors across the globe are also guilty of war crimes and crimes against humanity. Therefore, an end to this war without the total ethnic cleansing genocide of the Palestinian people or the Lebanese people or the defeat of the axis of resistance will lead to the collapse of the Zionist colony. And a collapse of the Zionist colony will bring a reckoning inside also the United States, and the empire will have to retreat to its natural borders. So the Americans will never allow the Zionist colony to stop this genocide that is happening. It's not that Netanyahu has to twist anybody's arm in the American establishment. They know that the future of American hegemony is intertwined with the future of the Zionist colony. Let's remember, Palestine is the most important geopolitical position in the world, and a retreat of Western imperialism from Palestine will bring them back to their natural borders in Europe, in North America, especially given their defeat in the international waters by Yemen. This is the last stand of this empire. It's not only the last stand of the Zionist colony, and that's why we see, as my colleague said from New York, Biden authorizing those attacks on Russia. The United States right now is pushing the whole world into a nuclear world war rather than end the existence of the Zionist colony or accept the equality with the rest of humanity and a multipolar world.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Daniel, you know, in this day and age, we rarely see a nuclear superpower stand behind and as an accomplice to this to a genocide like this, a campaign of ethnic cleansing, genocide, apartheid. What does Israel offer the U.S. that is so valuable to it as a state that it's willing to fund and stand behind and provide diplomatic cover for Israel regardless of the atrocities and barbarism involved?
The domination of one of the richest regions of the world, the Middle East, colonized in the wake of World War I and World War II as French and British and later on U.S. colonies. They use Israel as their battling ram against the interests of the Syrian people, the Iranian people, the Iraqi people, the Lebanese people, the Libyan people, the Syrian people, the Palestinian people. This is one of the greatest concentrations of oil and gas reserves in the world and of natural wealth. It shows who the Republicans and Democrats are truly loyal to. All of their lofty sounding talk about human rights and democracy, nothing could be more ridiculous. It even took 13 long genocidal months for Bernie Sanders to introduce this bill. And hard to believe that 19 senators actually voted against sending more military aid to the genocidal Zionist entity. 19 is a high number comparatively, but it also means 81 senators voted in favor. So once again, another $20 billion aid package passed. We are nearing $500 billion of our taxpayer money that has been sent to Israel. And they're very afraid that they could lose the propaganda offensive, that is the informational war, because we as educators, as journalists, and principally as organizers, as we go among the American people from upstate New York to Ohio and across the country, people can see with their own eyes what a Holocaust is. This goes against American values. This government does not speak in our name. And whether it's the BBC or CNN or Fox News or the New York Times, or our educational institutions, all of U.S. society is complicit in this Holocaust, and the American people should know that.
And I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I want to put that to you, Latha. U.S. Senate has just rejected Bernie Sanders and other lawmakers, for that matter, efforts to block arms sales to Israel. Biden had that $20 billion proposal to send more weapons to the regime. They wanted to try to block that. They only got about 19 of their colleagues on board. There are 100 senators, there are 50 states, each state gets two do the math. 19 is a start. It's a decent number, not when you have 100 senators and you have 44,000 people dead and 70% of Gaza turned into rubble. Why are more U.S. lawmakers not getting this for what it is?
Because all of this was all theatrics. The place of Bernie Sanders is controlled opposition. He is there to give the illusion to American public that they can achieve democracy through their vote, that they can have representation by their government if they vote. This is the whole place of what Bernie Sanders is and what is those rebels within the Democrats. They are there to make sure the sheep don't stray away from the slaughterhouse. And as we see, Mr. Bernie Sanders said many times that he is a Zionist. And the word Zionist means that you believe in Jewish supremacy over the indigenous population in Palestine and over the world as a whole. So Bernie Sanders is not doing anything that the state, the deep state in the United States, didn't ask him to do. This is all just theatrics to make it look like that there is a possibility for the population in the United States to get their government to do what they will. And because the United States government is right now really scared of the situation on the streets, we saw already the beginnings of revolts of the populations in the Netherlands, in France, because those governments are refusing the will of their own people, the majority of people in Europe, and the majority of the population of the United States are decent human beings, like the rest of us, and are against the genocide that is happening in Gaza. And in fact, the majority, somewhat like 70% of the population in the U.S., wants a full arms embargo on the Zionist colony. So Bernie Sanders is there just to make sure those citizens that are getting angry do not revolt, to stay confused, thinking that there is some hope in change through a democratic means. And as we will see in the next few weeks, there will be an extension of this war, opposite that anybody thinks. There will be an extension of this war in the region here, and there's a very big possibility of the war in Ukraine engulfing much of Europe very soon. And those days, when they come, if the populations in Europe and the United States haven't moved to change the realities and force their governments to abide by their will, we'll be too late to stop the coming world war.
Thank you, Laith. And Danny, I want for you to build on that. You kicked it off with the alluding to Bernie Sanders and that resolution and the 19 lawmakers that supported the 70 plus so that didn't. My question to you, there are a couple of narratives here that it was theatrics. I've heard that before, and I've also heard that these are the 17 are the lawmakers that APEC money was not able to get to. Which narrative do you buy and why?
Yeah, Lace argument is a powerful one. They're now making it illegal to critique Zionism, to critique Israel. They've defined that as being anti-Semitic. This is clearly anti-scientific. This is ridiculous. And these bills are sponsored often by the quote-unquote most progressive Democrats, like the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortezes and others who give this progressive veneer, this progressive guise to a Holocaust that progresses every single hour of every single day. We're over 400 days of genocide at this point. It's a Holocaust that's being televised on Instagram and on Twitter across the world. That's why they've resorted to the worst forms of censorship. How many of us educators, journalists, professionals have been fired, have been doxxed, have been threatened, have been interrogated and detained by the FBI. So internally, the U.S. is violating all of its sacred, quote-unquote, constitutional amendments. And we have to wield this as weapons in this battle of ideas so the American people can see the true nature of this system, which continues to be colonial and genocidal for the Palestinian people and for many other peoples throughout the world. Really, it's only the rise of a multipolar world that could stop this Holocaust, or the American people and the other populations within the West. Short of that, it's not the U.S. Congress, certainly, that's going to stop this genocide. They're in the pocket of the lobbies of AIPAC, of the military-industrial complex. So it has to be us, or it has to be the world's people through multipolarity.
And Laith, you know, the International Criminal Court has just issued a couple of arrest warrants, one for Benjamin Netanyahu, one for Yoav Gallant, the war minister he fired just a few weeks ago. What is the significance of this official branding of these two Israeli men of the Israeli leadership as war criminals?
The significant is now the whole Western system is on trial. We will be all waiting to see how these governments in the West react to this arrest warrant issue. And if the Western elite refuse to implement it, then it's the end of the international law and the international agencies that were built after World War II to govern that international law. We are kind of at the death moments of that body of international law and organizations that were built after World War II. This is the last moment for us to save that regime of international law and government and international agencies. If the ICC warrants are not implemented, then we will be living in law of the jungle. International law will not be existence, and the all the agencies that we know of the United Nations will collapse. This is the same moment before between World War I and World War II when Italy, Germany, and Japan refused the rulings of the League of Nations refused to stop colonization and committed their genocides in Libya, Ethiopia, Angola, Korea, and China, which led to the collapse of the League of Nations and all the body of international law that came with it. And it took another World War II come up with a new international governance system. So it is up to the West right now to either blow up this body of international law and agencies that govern it, and or accept multipolarity, to equality with the rest of humanity. So this is very critical moment for not only the Palestinians who are seeking justice for this genocide, but it's also a critical moment for all of humanity.
Look, we're actually out of time, but I really wanted to get that also to you, Danny, if you can, in less than 40 seconds. Over 124 ICC member countries are now mandated to arrest Netanyahu or Gallant if they travel there. If they do or they don't, that's a whole different story. But from your perspective, Danny, what is it, Daniel, or is it Danny, pardon, what is the significance? Is there a silver lining here? It's an unenforceable ICC ruling, but there has to be some kind of positivity that comes out of it for the near or distant future. Your final thoughts?
In the court of world opinion, it is indeed symbolic, even though the ICC has no teeth behind it. It shows that the United Nations, which is by no means any type of radical or anti-imperialist body, but rather a simple, it's a creation of the Western powers themselves. And as Laith has said, the entire Western capitalist system is what is on trial. So even if the UN finds Gallant and Netanyahu and Biden and Kamala Harris guilty, certainly that sends a strong message throughout the world that it reflects world
All
opinion.
Right, gentlemen. Thank you both for joining us. Stay safe to the both of you. Laith Maarouf, activist and political commentator there, joining us from Beirut, and Daniel Shaw, academic and commentator, joining us from New York. That's the end of this segment, your Spotlight program. Thank you for joining us, and goodbye for now. Thank you.
option for today and a better tomorrow. IRIB English Radio. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Limelight. Food sovereignty is a matter of life and death in Gaza, where the Zionist regime has been deliberately destroying Palestinians' ability to sustain themselves. Concerning this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, "For Youssef Abu Rabi from Beit Lahia in northern Gaza, farming ran in his blood. He had been doing it from a very young age," the 24-year-old said with pride when interviewed by Electronic Intifada in September. But over the past year, many farmers in Gaza, like Abu Rabi, have had to abandon their land, crops, and their way of life due to Israeli regime bombing and evacuation orders. Instead of producing their own food, they, like everyone else in Gaza, have become dependent on the little humanitarian aid allowed in as the Zionist regime deliberately destroys Palestinian self-sufficiency. And they have also become the targets and victims of Israel's genocide. On October 21st, Abu Rabi was killed in a drone strike near his nursery in Beit Lahia, where an Israeli extermination campaign is underway. A source with direct knowledge said that three other young men, all of them civilians, were killed alongside Abu Rabi. In the days before he was killed, Abu Rabi posted a short video on his Instagram account documenting him and another person ducking for cover on a narrow street. They had come under fire while distributing parcels of food in bright blue plastic bags. The gunshots audible in the video. After the announcement of his death, a much more upbeat video of Abu Rabi went viral. In it, he pays tribute to the strength and resilience of his people who are insisting on staying, planting, and wanting to rebuild again, despite Israel's siege and destruction of northern Gaza. Before the Zionist regime genocide in Gaza began last year, Abu Rabi was pursuing a degree in agriculture from Gaza City's Al-Azhar University, now reduced to rubble. On October 8, 2023, heavy bombing forced Abu Rabi and his family to flee from Beit Lahia to Jabalia refugee camp and then to Gaza City. The family moved no fewer than 10 times, staying with family and friends, as well as at schools turned into shelters and hospitals. The displacement of Abu Rabi and his family in Gaza, where the majority of the population are refugees from lands now fully controlled by Israel, echoed the initial mass displacement of Palestinians from their homeland in 1948. During that expulsion, more than 75 years ago, former landlords became dependent on food aid and lived in tents for years. The Gaza district of historic Palestine, made of three cities and 54 agricultural villages, most of them destroyed in 1948, was reduced from some 1,111 square kilometers to 365 square kilometers, around 20% of its previous area. This is what we know today as the Gaza Strip. Palestinian farmers who owned and lived off their land ended up as refugees in aid camps in Gaza. After the disposition of historic Palestine in 1948, many Palestinian farmers were forced to change professions as they no longer owned land to cultivate. Instead, they learned trades that supported their families in this new reality, including construction, carpentry, and auto machines. In 1948, the population of Gaza tripled, and the coastal enclave's limited agricultural land decreased as the population grew. In intervening years, Israeli access restrictions, often enforced with lethal fire, further reduced the lands on which Palestinians cultivated food in Gaza. During 2000s, until the start of the genocide last year, the Israeli regime military raised cropland along Gaza's periphery and used crop dusters to spray herbicide on cultivated areas to create a buffer zone to increase its soldiers' field of vision. Before the genocide, people in Gaza turned to other means of production, such as rooftop gardens. Even though Gaza hugs the Mediterranean Sea and fishing is a traditional Palestinian industry, freshwater fish farms became a thriving business in the territory due to the land, sea, and air blockade imposed by the Zionist regime in 2007. For years, the Zionist regime has severely restricted Palestinians' access to Gaza's coastal waters, and many fishers have been arrested, injured, and killed by the Zionist regime navy while trying to make a living. While producing food under Israeli occupation has never been easy, now it's all but impossible. Palestinians in Gaza, who were able to produce much of their own food before October 2023, are therefore struggling to find the bare minimum to survive. As of October last year, Gaza's population stood at 2.3 million Palestinians. Since then, the Zionist regime military has killed at least 42,718 people in Gaza, with thousands more missing under the rubble. Another 100,280 people have been injured, according to the Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza. Hundreds of those killed and injured were farmers who greatly contributed to Gaza's food basket despite immense challenges. Surviving farmers have faced impossible conditions in order to cultivate what remains of Gaza's crops. Palestinian farmers in Gaza who are able to plant are growing fruits and vegetables that can be harvested after a short period of a few months, such as squash and eggplants. They do not have the luxury of planting seeds that require plowing the land a longer growing time until it's ready to harvest and consume. Rising costs make farming prohibitive, forcing some farmers like Jaber to cultivate a smaller area of land than they did in the past. Electricity-generated irrigation is no longer available after the Zionist regime cut off the supply of electricity to Gaza in early October last year. Generators need around 20 liters of diesel to operate, an amount that is too difficult to find and too expensive to afford. Some farmers in Gaza were already using solar-powered irrigation systems after the Zionist regime blockade beginning in 2007 caused chronic fuel shortages, but solar power cannot fully supplement electricity. Solar panels, when available, are helpful, according to Jaber, but they are not accessible for many farmers because the prices of solar panels also skyrocketed after October 7th.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Mm-hmm. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Hezbollah destroys half a dozen Merkava tanks in a single day as the movement's missiles continue to hit Israel's military bases in retaliatory operations. Gaza officials say Israeli forces have killed more than 1,000 doctors, nurses and healthcare staff since the start of the regime's genocide. And Iran calls for global action to defend Palestinian women and girls amid Israel's unprecedented violence of violent onslaught on the Gaza Strip.